One of the joys for me in being a part of the Dane Sanctuary Coalition is that it's an interfaith group. And that I've had the chance, as many of you have as well, to work alongside committed activists from a bunch of congregations, including several Jewish congregations. Later today, I'll actually be on a panel at one of those synagogues, sharing a bit of our process to become a sanctuary church in 2017. And in late December, actually the week of Christmas, I had a chance to meet with three leaders from this synagogue to outline questions we had been talking about here and things that we were learning as they were beginning their process. And after thanking me for meeting with them, they suggested maybe once I got done with Christmas services here at Orchard Ridge, I could become a Jew, join their congregation, and join in their discussion process throughout the spring. I loved that we could joke like that. I loved that we share this common quest, even though our traditions are things we don't often know much about. And the beauty of these kinds of interactions, whenever they come, remind us of how valuable it is to see the world from a lens different than our own. To relish the beauty of another tradition, another set of terms or acronyms, but a shared passion for justice. Conversations and relationships like this have led to the creation of a sermon series this spring, in which we'll be exploring thinkers and theologians outside the Christian tradition, including Jewish writers and Buddhist leaders, female poets, and others. And today we explore some of the wisdom of Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. He was born in Warsaw, Poland, to a long line of Hasidic rabbis. He studied philosophy in Germany, but was expelled back to Warsaw during the Nazi regime. And he escaped Poland just before the Nazis invaded during World War II and resettled in the United States. And in the 1950s and 60s, his writings contributed greatly to the spiritual renewal of Judaism, especially in this country. He looked and sounded like an Old Testament prophet, and believe me, that is a cleaned up version of what he looked like. As his hair got longer and his beard got longer. He called folks back to the Word of God, challenging Jews to attend to issues of justice. At the same time, he was passionately interfaith, once called an apostle to the Gentiles. He raised a prophetic challenge to the social issues of his day, including marching with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and protesting Vietnam with him. He appears beside King in several of the most iconic photos of the civil rights era, the March to Selma and this one protesting Vietnam at Arlington National Cemetery. And of course, it's impossible to condense his lifetime of work and writing into a couple of sermons. But amidst the craziness of our time, his almost forgotten voice, or for many of us, an unknown voice, is one that might help us gain perspective on who we are and where we are now. And in today's terms, I think Heschel would be described as a social liberal, but a theological conservative. And what this means, I think, is he had a very high view of God and a Holocaust informed view of humanity. He knew the power of destruction within the human spirit. Together, his awe of God and his reality of humanity shaped how he imagined we as a people could move forward on pressing social issues. Stand still and consider the wondrous works of the Lord. Heschel often quoted this verse from the book of Job. The problem, he said, is our sense of wonder is declining. And as it does, our humanity deteriorates, and also our ability to be aware of God's presence deteriorates. So his faith was shaped by a simple truth. Awareness of the divine begins with wonder, for the beginning of wisdom is the awe of God. And regardless of how theistic our faith is or how personal our sense of God is in our lives, I think we can appreciate that reverence for a spirit of life that is greater than us is crucial to a full and vibrant faith. This, however, was coupled with Heschel's belief in the way human ego prevents us from understanding God. He wrote, I am afraid of people who are never embarrassed at their own pettiness, prejudices, envy, conceit. The end of embarrassment is a callousness that points to the end of humanity. He continues, our world is one that's full of grandeur, and it has been reduced to a carnival. There are slums, disease, and starvation all over the world, and we are building more and more luxurious hotels in Las Vegas. I shudder, he said, at the thought of a society ruled by people who are absolutely certain of their wisdom, by people to whom everything in the world is crystal clear, whose minds know no mystery, no uncertainty, because the truth of being human is gratitude. Its secret is appreciation. These statements were written in 1964, but I can think of no truer or clearer statement of our current predicament. Oh, that we would remember what it is like as a culture to be embarrassed, or to see our pettiness, to confess our small-mindedness. Said another way, in Heschel's words, prayer begins where our power ends. It is only in our recognition of human limits that we can draw on the sacred and the divine. It is only in being sufficiently embarrassed that we can live into the challenge and the divine demand for action. Peter Marty, who is editor-in-chief of the Christian Century magazine, nuanced this sentiment even more in this week's edition. In response to yet another school shooting, are we ever going to be sufficiently embarrassed by these shootings as a culture? Marty writes, a similar pattern emerges every time. The coverage moves in to explore the shooter's motives. We combine guesswork and curiosity as people puzzle over how such a dastardly act could happen. Good people don't do this kind of thing, the reasoning goes. Only bad ones do. Marty says this thinking helps feed the narrative that God makes only two kinds of people. One kind is righteous and can be trusted to behave honorably regardless of what they have in their hands. The other is unrighteous and cannot be trusted for any good. He continues, the problem with this crude dichotomy is that it rests on a naive view of human nature. If only evil people committing evil deeds could be separated from the rest of us, we might be just fine. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And he remembers that Reinhold Niebuhr said that often evil is not done by obviously evil people, but by righteous people who forget the limits of their righteousness. And he concludes by saying, I think we're all there, sorting through this thicket of self-righteousness is complicated. Self-criticism can be tough to engage. Admitting individual wrong is hard because we fall in love with our moral positions. At our Thursday morning meditation group, we were having a conversation on all kinds of issues like this, not this one in particular, but issues like this, and somebody said, life is a mystery. And then somebody else said, well, life is messy. And so then we wondered, could it just be both? A mystery. So that was a new word to me created that morning. So on this first Sunday after Easter, it's good to remember how much mess and mystery existed in our crucifixion and resurrection narratives. If the faithful way forward combines awe and confession, which I think is a ritual response to Heschel's embarrassment, what does awe look like in our life? when and where do we tap into it? How intentional in the busyness of our lives are we paying attention to and soaking in the awesomeness around us? Just a week ago on Easter Sunday, I stood in the freezing cold right outside this window at 6 in the morning. And I will say at that point I was alone. There were a few others. But in the dark, really the only thing that was out there was an amazing full moon. It was magical. And quite honestly, for me, it made getting up in the morning worth it. I did not linger because, as a couple people pointed out, the wind chill was 8 degrees. But I was blessed with a gift of appreciation in just a few seconds. This was not a half hour prayer before the full moon. It was a few seconds. Your awe might come that way. It might come in other ways. You might be able to appreciate the full moon from inside. But the real question is, how do we, each of us, create space in our lives for awe? It's one of the reasons I love coming to church. I hear in conversations outside of this congregation that church is anything but awesome because there's people in it, and people are messed up, and people do stupid things, and people are hypocritical. But I take a different view. Gathering here and the many other places we gather, for me, can be a discipline in finding awe, if we allow it to be there. Last Sunday, as with every Sunday, I felt a deep reverence watching different interactions among God's people. Some I was part of and some I just witnessed from a distance. Broken people, all of us, finding connection and finding solace and community. Praying for the lonely people because some of us are lonely. The wondrous works of the Lord are all around for those who are looking. So how do we remember to look? And if we are one of those prone to finding fault with ourselves before anyone else, how do we remember to find awe in our own creation? In a lovely talk on Wednesday night about nonviolence and the environment, activist and priest Father John Deere invoked the need for kindness as environmental activists, starting with kindness towards ourselves and then moving out from there. And I think the same could be said for awe. If we are not in awe of our own life, it will be hard to feel true awe in others or in God's creation. For some of us, the first prayer can and should be, instill me, O God, with reverence for how you have created me in your image as well. And sometimes awe takes the form of just a deep appreciation for where life has brought us in the midst of uncertainties or struggles. A group of children last Sunday played an April Fool's joke on me. They were led, I will say, by Julie Mazur. And I have indicated that I will remember that. But, of course, I cherished. And I cherished the amazing path my life has taken in this congregation and among many different waves of children over the years. I cherish the blessings, the challenges, the history, and even the future. And even as I cherished it in a few minutes, you'll be moving forward by naming a search committee to replace me. I was struck by Heschel's reminder. Prayer begins where my power ends. The truth of being human is gratitude. It's secret appreciation. And what about the other side of Heschel's balance? What does confessing our small-mindedness look like? And I think I need to be the first to confess that I have minimized the need for confession. Like many of you, I've
often thought the worldwide church overdoes flagellation and sin and needs to rebalance with appropriate blessing and affirmation. And I do believe in original blessing. But have I swung too far? Have I, as a liberal and progressive Christian, placed too much confidence in humanity? And even worse, in my brand of humanity? Have I forgotten how small our imagination is at times? Have I too often equated my imagination with God's and thus made those with other kinds of imaginations the less than desirable ones, or maybe even the evil ones? The beauty of our progressive faith is our willingness to embrace the complexity of God within the limits of human ego. So whatever words you want to use, how is it that we can help each other maintain this balance between originally blessed and forever sinful? Possessing this divine spark of wonder and light, while also capable of incredible destruction to ourselves and others. Each one of us. It's my hope that Heschel's call for the both and of godliness and godlessness within us will be an antidote to the temptation of smugness. Not a day goes by when we read or listen to the news that we aren't, speak for myself, that I am not invited to a feast of self-righteousness. And I hope that we can help each other by our humility and our honesty to remember to confess, to pray, to turn to wonder and mystery when our hearts can't understand. But it is also my hope that together we can share awe and remind one another and everyone we meet of the beautiful mysteries of life and spring and humanity and love. I invite us into a moment of silent prayer as we give thanks for the awe we have experienced and offer a word of confession. Where is he? Let us pray together.